the ANews podcast. This is episode 73 for July 20, 2018. This podcast covers anarchist activity, ideas, and conversations from the previous week. It's designed to be useful to anarchists and the anarcho-curious. Give us feedback and constructive criticism at our email address, podcast@anarchistnews.org. And for more information and usually some good commentary, go to the non-sectarian anarchistnews.org. Editorials. Anarchist on Anarchist Conflict by Ingrate. Recently, I had the opportunity to spend a couple of days in Athens as a stopover on a trip elsewhere. We stayed in Exarchia, which is a neighborhood that I assume needs no introduction here, and I was excited to have the opportunity to explore its streets and maybe even find some comrades. Exarchia is currently in a state of slow gentrification. While it is still very much what one could honestly call the anarchist neighborhood, it is also home to cool bars catering to the 20 to 30-something hipster crowd. One of the people we stayed with, a 60-something artist who had been a participant in the November 1973 occupation of the Polytechnic, talked candidly to me about the changes she had seen in the neighborhood. Just when I thought she was going to go down an anti-immigrant and anti-anarchist path, she brought up both topics unprompted, saying, "The anarchists, of course, are here. They do so much, some of it good, some of it bad. They house the migrants and they demonstrate. I am too old for demonstrations, but I used to." As our conversation went on, she spoke of the anarchists in a generally favorable sense, reflected on the December 2008 uprising in response to the murder of Alexis, while also expressing skepticism about some of the anarchist factions. Ignoring the false dichotomy of good-bad for a moment, I was struck that I know very few former radicals in the U.S. who view anarchists with similar nuance or appreciation, especially if they live in a neighborhood with a high concentration of anarchists. And make no mistake, despite the hipster forces of gentrification, the comrades in Exarchia are still a tangible presence within the neighborhood, especially as compared to anywhere else I've ever been, which admittedly isn't all that many places. Of course, three-ish days doesn't give me a lot to base this off of, but the feeling was palpable. It was our, or their, neighborhood, and it wasn't being gentrified without a fight. On our first night, my travel companion and I meandered our way through the graffiti-lined streets to Exarchia Square, which, to be fully transparent, is really more of a triangle. About a block away, we heard the growing echo of chanting, rhythmic and chanting. From around a corner came a mass of people with banners, bearing black flags and one-inch wooden dowels, mostly wearing all black and masked, many with motorcycle helmets on, looking ready for a fight. I knew what I was seeing. The anarchists were looking to fuck shit up on a Friday night. Along with the anarchist contingent were many unmasked folks who seemed to be residents, punks, and immigrants. I relatively quickly assessed that this demo was not intending to fight the cops, who seemed mostly to stay on the periphery of the neighborhood, albeit with batons, shields, and riot gear at the ready, or the fascists, whose own graffiti was obvious elsewhere in Athens, Golden Dawn, Swazis, take your pick, but was seemingly not tolerated in Exarchia. So who was the target tonight? Unfortunately, as a non-Greek speaker, I had a difficult time finding anyone willing to both talk to me and able to fully explain the purpose of the demo. I gathered it was in solidarity with immigrants and squats, but that was really all I could get in the moment. I took a handbill, but it was all Greek to me. My attempts to read what banners had English on them were met with extreme suspicion. Fair enough. We watched as they rolled on around another corner, their chants continuing to echo off the buildings. As we wandered the neighborhood, we encountered the march two or three more times and then eventually rolled across what was obviously a squat with a mass of similarly dressed for success folks standing on the balcony of the building and in the street out front. I felt that I had landed in anarchy land. Do anarchists just mask up and hang out on Fridays in Exarchia? I still don't know the answer to that. What I do know is that the march eventually terminated in front of the squat, with the folks from the squat on one side of the street and the marchers squaring off toe-to-toe with them. Eventually, I managed to get hold of a flyer with one side in English, and as it turns out, this was a march against anarchists who evicted migrants from a squat due to alleged drug dealing, sexual assault, and other behavior not very fitting with a certain take on anarchist praxis. The folks at the squat were seemingly the anarcho-evictors. It was anarchist versus anarchist, and not knowing more than the snippets I had, I certainly didn't feel myself in a place to make an informed decision on which side I was on. There is a lot of nuance that one can't gain in 20 to 30 minutes and across a language barrier. I'm not trying here to pick sides and fall back into a good anarchist, bad anarchist game, though it must be said that when anarchists become the enforcers of morality, it makes me nervous whatever direction that plays out. Problem was, I saw two sides playing morality cards, and as an outsider, I was unsure of which, if either, to trust. This moment of insider anarchist, outsider American, fresh off the plane, perspective gave me pause. It conjured issues I've grappled with closer to home regarding what I see as one of the more important and relatedly difficult issues we face. How do we deal with conflict? Not conflict between us and the state. That is easy. Attack. But what about when we find ourselves in conflict with other anarchists or those who purport to be our friends? Perhaps the answer is the same. Attack! But often how that actually plays out feels a bit like using the same tool for a different task. Like when you need a Phillips and you only have a slot head screwdriver. You're still trying to screw something, but how you will, maybe not screw it as effectively, if at all. Chisel adds, you might also screw up your tools. When I first called myself an anarchist, I saw solidarity everywhere. Every struggle reflected my own, every participant a possible anarchist or ally. As time has passed, and I've both aged and been betrayed by those presumed allies, my perspective has changed. I'm more hostile, or, if I'm being charitable myself, more wary. One can only be burned so many times by vanguardists, social democrats, and moralists before you start to see enemies in every new face. I have also come to see, and this should be no surprise to anyone who uses ANews or listens to the ANews podcast, that conflict doesn't only happen between anarchists and their status enemies. Conflict also occurs intramurally among anarchists. We tend to be a headstrong bunch, and there is a vastness of space for differing perspectives. Anarchism is essentially a position of negation. What we are actually for, if anything, is all over the map. I don't believe we should give each other a pass just because we all circle our A's or fly black flags. I don't think using the same jargon or reading the same books makes us necessarily not enemies. There are a lot of anarchists I don't want a damn thing to do with and who I am antagonistic toward, given their hostility to my anarchy and the projects I find affinity with. But all the same, it seems like there is a gray area that we need to spend more time in. There are certainly also anarchists I ought to feel political affinity with who I don't want a damn thing to do with. Ultimately, I think this is desirable and should be expected. I neither desire nor even have the capacity to perceive of some future where conflicts don't flare up, even to the point of physical confrontation. I see conflict as clarifying, especially in regards to people I assumed were comrades, where they actually stand. I found it interesting that the conflict I encountered in Exarchia was two factions throwing down about something concrete, using direct action to try to gain concrete ends. For one, keeping a squat safe from supposed drug dealers and predatory individuals. For the other, reclaiming that squat for the evicted migrants. In the U.S., so much of the conflict between anarchists seems performative, or maybe even virtue signaling, as staking oneself as a good anarchist, as opposed to those bad ones, over there, more than as a place of having an actual goal that is being achieved. When dealing with intramilieu conflict, do we engage with the same degree of hostility as we do for other enemies, or do we escalate at the same velocity? For many people, and often that includes me, I think the answer is yes, that those moments more clearly define our own positions. Where I've run into problems is that my relations don't neatly fit into boxes. Sometimes I cannot clearly position someone as being outside of the circles I might work with on a project. While I have a tendency to work with people who have perspectives similar to my own, I also often work on projects involving people from very different corners of the big tent. More than once, I have met people who, in theory, see nearly eye to eye with me, but who are absolutely not individuals I would want to be involved in any action with. This leaves me personally in a conundrum. When thinking about the larger context of the milieu, this presents some questions that need to be thought about. Or maybe they don't, and we just deal with them as they arise. The more I think about it, the more I realize I don't have clear answers when those conflicts arise close to home or in my own circles. When it comes to being an accidental anarchist observer in Exarchia, a place I don't know, and among people who I might consider comrades but whose lives and struggles I know only from afar, I wouldn't even presume to offer solutions. Thanks to Ingrate for this editorial. What's new this week? Chile. Anarchist comrade Freddy Fuentevilla has been released from prison, from Act for Freedom. This announcement, with good news, is interspersed with messages between and references to people who I don't know, which makes it a bit confusing. It reflects to me the confusion of happiness, outrage, sadness, and preoccupation that is normal for any situation involving our friends and the courts. Happiness that someone is getting out, outrage that we had to deal with this at all, sadness at time and lives lost, and preoccupation with others who are not getting out. Quote, yesterday, 18th of June, 2018, our brother, friend, and comrade, Freddy Fuentevilla-Sa, was released from the high-security prison in Santiago de Chile after 10 years and almost 3 months of uninterrupted imprisonment on what the language of justice and power calls parole. To talk about this long journey with its vicissitudes, every second of imprisonment, is difficult through these words full of contrasting sensations, when the immense happiness of seeing one of ours come out from behind these walls, meeting his loved ones again, feeding the indomitable hearts of all those who give up and don't bow down in the face of the horrible temple of detention, unquote. I think they meant who don't give up.
Beyond Occupation from Friendly Fire Collective. Thoughts on the two recent occupations in Philly, first at the ICE office and then at City Hall. This comes across as a liberal article, with appeals to City Hall. Quote, this base is limited, as action planning cannot occur in such a public space. That said, it has been a space for educating, connecting organizers and people of good conscience, and most importantly, a very public way of getting the mayor's attention, unquote. Anarchists are referred to mostly as vectors of strife with other organizers. Quote, the first night of the occupation included coalition organizers squabbling with a few anarchists of a more illegalist, insurrectionist tendency. This was aired out very publicly through a zine that was published online and passed out at the final assembly at the previous occupation. Tensions between those of a more anarchist orientation and those of a more Marxist orientation were heightened, unquote. Finally, there are the leftist appeals to unity, quote, this occupation ending in such a way will reflect badly on all of us, and even more importantly, could hinder and even sabotage the campaign, unquote. No, Virginia, we cannot just all get along.
Misanthropic Wild Tendencies, from Kalinov Most Publication by way of 325. This is a bit of a redundancy, since this article was posted as a separate piece, though it is included in the pamphlet against eco-extremism, which we'll discuss next. But at any rate, this is a new translation of a piece published originally last year. So file this under the tendency of beating a dead horse, since the only people continuing to keep the name eco-extremists in the news are the folks who don't think they should be talked about, certainly not by anarchists. Quote, we find it curious that they call themselves individualists and nihilists, being that they believe in entities that are above them. How can the individual be developed integrally if their reality is subject to something that controls them? We appeal and we fight to destroy all the chains, creeds, and laws. Unquote.
USA, call for international solidarity with Prison Strike 2018. From actforfree.nostate.net, quote, facing a situation meant to stifle any glimmer of joy in humanity, people in prisons across the United States are calling attention to the lack of respect for human life that is embedded in our nation's penal ideology by courageously going on strike from August 21st to September 9th. The dates, chosen by prison organizers, signify the strike's continuation with the legacies of Nat Turner, who began his rebellion on August 21st, 1831, and the Attica Uprising, which began September 9th, 1971. Nat Turner, who was born into slavery, took part in a major insurrection, freeing slaves from plantations and executing slave owners. The Attica Uprising, an important milestone for prison resistance in the United States, took place following the shooting of black revolutionary George Jackson by a prison guard during an escape attempt. Militant actions in support of the prison strike will send a powerful message of defiance to the American state and solidarity to rebels inside prison walls, unquote.
Anarchy in the USA. From Mel Magazine, which says about itself that it, quote, covers sex, relationships, health, money, and culture from a male point of view, even though we're not all male and aren't always sure what that means. We value the stories that no one is hearing, the perspectives that no one is considering, and the people who no one knows. Founded in 2015 in LA by Dollar Shave Club. Unquote. This is mainstream media, and while it's sympathetic, it is also predictably, at least mildly, infuriating, citing, as it does, the Portland Anarchist Road Care Volunteer Group and IWW as an anarchist-driven organization. Sigh!
Call for an independent materials fair from 325. Quote, in response to the call for a sixth International Week in Solidarity for Anarchist Prisoners, which will take place all over the world from the 23rd to the 30th of August, there will be a first winter fair of independent materials on August 25th. This is an open call for anyone who wants to send us proposals with an anti-authoritarian focus to add to the activity. The struggle for freedom is impossible without fighting against prisons. These disgusting spaces are surrounded by walls, violent forms of control, security devices, and constant vigilance. Without such a structure, it would be impossible for any state or any government to remain in power. It is necessary to see prison not only as the main tool of domination against the subversive people who prefer war to the passivity of the masses, but also as a laboratory of the system and one of the main means to perpetuate slavery and work, unquote.
This is not about free speech. This is simply self-defense. From Anonymous, out of New Zealand / Aotearoa. It's their turn to try to parse the space between disallowing some people from speaking and promoting free speech. The comments in this thread are on point, as far as I'm concerned, noting that all speech is related to action, and that it would be more honest to just say that they're not actually pro-free speech. The article attempts to adjust the power differential as relevant, but it doesn't do so very articulately. I think there's space for more thinking here, as I've been arguing in my head about the definition of racism along similar lines. That is, people fight for the definition of racism that they want because of the emotional baggage of the word, and probably people claim to be for free speech for similar reasons. How does that emotional baggage work for anarchist goals, and how against them? An ongoing project.
May the flames of joy burn, may France burn, translated by Bordered by Silence, a screed that argues, using much the same argumentation of the anti-television piece mentioned later, that football is an opiate of the masses, quote, "The question is the existence of nations themselves, of capitalists, and all the exploitation, repression, borders, wars, and deaths that come with them. And so while the praises are sung, as they were 20 years ago, of the incredible existence of a black, white, and Arab French team, presented to the nation as a symbol of republican integration, there is silence about the very real social conflicts. These same French players were described as immature gang leaders by the Minister of Sports, Roselyne Bachelot, in 2010. Because when Les Bleus are bad, the media and politicians quickly connect them back to their original conditions, that of working class people from immigrant families, the rabble," unquote. The comments on this thread are not so great, although the point about how to have fun when fun is in fact part of social control is a real question.
Call for submissions for the Night Forest Journal. Quote, "In response to the ugliness of sound abounding around us, we were inspired to begin the Night Forest Project, creating music of animosity toward the Leviathan in whose entrails we linger. We have welcomed other dissatisfied individuals to harmonize in both aggression and joy, reveling in our personal wars upon the constraints of a civilized world, as well as the ecstasies of brief escape into the truly wild and beautiful," unquote. Poetry lovers, take heed.
Media. Against the Machine. Selected writings from Plain Words. From Plain Words. 44 pages. Articles from the website of Plain Words in Bloomington on a wide variety of topics. Resisting selfies and television, self-expression as a trap, being against social media, and living online as a young person who grew up with computers. A contradictory piece about trolling that both says that it appeals to the powerless and that it is a tendency of those with privilege. A When Animals Attack piece about an angry buck. A thoughtful letter in rejoinder to the television article, and then the article author's thoughtful response to that letter. Thoughtfulness all around! Finally is a piece on tactics for coping, and what not coping looks like. Quote, "Rather than shame people for using their smartphones in public, these pieces are meant to demonstrate what we have to gain by fighting against the techno nightmare. Specifically, they describe how these technologies impoverish our relationships and dull our capacity for combative social struggle," unquote.
Against Eco-Extremism, from 325, 24 pages. This is a compilation of anti-eco-extremist pieces not from the U.S. A few of them are explicitly anti-pacifist and anti-anarcho-leftist, especially the one called ITS, or the Rhetoric of Decay, from some groups that originally supported ITS and now call them out. Many of the pieces criticize eco-extremists along similar lines to criticisms in Black Seed and elsewhere, the moralism in their anti-moralist rhetoric, the romanticization of nature, etc. And only one of the pieces here claims, or even alludes to, a claim that discussing ITS and eco-extremism is bad, i.e., there is no platforming going on that I noticed. This makes this pamphlet a significant step up from the most popular anti-eco-extremist pieces that have come out of the U.S. so far. As this is written by nihilist anarchists, among others, there is less of the nihilist strawmanning that has happened in other publications.
Montreal Counter Info number 6, Spring 2018, 6 pages with French and English versions of pieces from Montreal. including on Cedar's imprisonment, the G7, sabotage of IT infrastructure, arson and various other vandalisms, anti-fascist actions, some target identification, and so on. Quote, one morning in April 2018, our amateur construction crew released thousands of crickets into the newly built headquarters of the Montreal architecture company LeMay. We pulled a sheet of plywood off the side of the building and funneled the crickets into a recently completed office space. LeMay, along with the Quebec City-based company Group A, has been awarded a contract to build a new immigration detention center in Laval, a suburb of Montreal. We oppose borders, prisons, and immigration detention centers. We struggle for a world where people are free to stay and free to move, a world without white supremacy, capitalism, colonialism, and patriarchy, unquote.
Audio. Another word for white ally is coward. Audio zine. From Resonance Audio, 15 minutes. This is a recording of a pamphlet that was very popular for a while, as it was the hot new thing in ally circles, for a minute. Even liberals these days are getting into slamming white guilt, see pretty much any television show dealing with race. But this pamphlet does a good job of explaining the problem with the concept of being an ally with a whole group of people who disagree with each other. It continues to blow my mind, however, that every single time race gets brought up, it is in the context of black and white. Quote, there is no singular black voice that can be listened to, no authentic community leadership which to follow. There are only many different people with different ideas, life experiences, and perspectives. To think otherwise, to think that all black people share a common opinion, is extremely problematic, one might even say racist. Unquote. The invisibilization of other people of color as if they're just less extreme examples of some bipolar order is frankly horrifying.
Bad news. Angry Voices from Around the World. Episode 13 for July 2018. 32 minutes. Quote, A Radio Berlin bringing us an introduction to Vedenga Rojava, a new podcast project created by people on the ground in northern Syria. From A Radio Vienna, we hear information about a demonstration against an upcoming EU summit in Austria in September, as well as a call-out for an international week of solidarity with anarchist prisoners. Words about the upcoming national prison strike in the so-called United States from our friends at the Final Straw Radio. Dissident Island Radio in the UK brings you short updates from around the country touching on the enclosure of public space, immigration control, animal rights, and the ongoing struggle to stop fracking taking hold, unquote.
The Brilliant, episode 74, An Hour. This episode is the host talking to an old friend about getting older and perhaps more mature, is that good or bad, and what to do, and working with people we care for and disagree with. It's one of the most fun episodes so far. Lots of laughter.
Topic of the week, anarchy and escapism. What is the goal of an anarchist if not to escape? Escape, that is, from the mundane, unpleasant, needless, devouring insanity of modern, quote-unquote, life. Life there, wearing scare quotes. Because the stagnant uniformity of the modern landscape doesn't mix well with the motion and diversity I strongly associate with the vibrant phenomena of life on Earth. Perhaps this is because this city I live in is a two-bit refrigerated nightmare, but the clawing drone of rush hour Tokyo is scarcely less oppressive. Despite all its apparent motion, its glitter-ridden and glowing edifice, Tokyo too wears the cloak of smoke and stagnant philosophies, of mundanity and broken dreams, even if it does so with an alluring macabre flair and a spectacular grandiosity. So what is the desire to escape if not healthy, hedonistic, honest? Epicurean, even, in the relatively colloquial sense. Why does seemingly so little of our discussion involve what we as anarchists actually do to escape, how we actually spend our time? It seems like almost everyone's instinct when confronted with this modern world we've worked so hard to create is to escape, quickly and as much as possible, self-identified anarchist or not. I've been on Left Book. I've walked around malls. It isn't the attempt at escape I find nauseating about those places. It's the links that bring the would-be escapee back to their cell. The links I see between the escape now and the later return to this massifying Leviathan. The consumerism, the bland philosophy, the fake smiles, the empty talk, the poses, the show, the spectacle. You've been outside too. You know what I mean. And yet stigma still sticks to the idea of escape. It still holds the air of naughtiness, perhaps even criminality. We're supposed to be working. We chide ourselves. This is Ariel. I am here with Gerardo. The topic of the week is very long. And I have decided to truncate it a bit. It doesn't mean that other things mentioned might not be touched on, but I would like the conversation to be a little directed and only about 15 minutes. So we're going to stop for there from now. And honestly, I'm not sure how much of it I could get through without laughing. Welcome, Gerardo. Hello.
Yo.
How you doing?
Pretty good. Not too bad.
So since you're new here, why don't you talk to me about what you think of when people talk, when anarchists talk about escapism?
When anarchists talk about escapism.
Yes.
Often, I don't know, I think usually it's kind of like, seems to be the primitive milieu who kind of like rewilding and all that type of stuff and going off the grid. Mm-hmm. That's usually what I first think of when you specifically put anarchism and escapism together, which is actually like, at least with this younger generation, I've noticed that there's a lot of just a lot of people who want to kind of drop out of the society, you know, like drop all of technology and just live out in the woods, which seems to fit into that. But I'm not sure how, well, I mean, most of the people who I know wouldn't be able to survive. Most who express that, like, they wouldn't actually, don't even have any skills to actually achieve any of that. So to them, it's just like an idealized state. And I don't know, when I first thought of, when I first saw the word escapism and was reading that, my first thought was kind of like, what do I do? And I was like, well, I watch anime, I go on the internet, play video games. And that's kind of what I think when I think of escapism, usually like entertainment or stuff like that. Especially now with like the emergence, well, you know, still very much at its infancy, but still the emergence of virtual reality. And how that would affect the escapism of a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know. What about you? What, you mentioned CrimeSync earlier.
Well, because, so the presence of the Back to the Land project has been constant. It's been, been a theme for every generation. And it, some people actually achieve it. It rarely fails as a communal, rarely succeeds as a communal project. And there are those who would argue that that's actually not escapism. It's just getting out of the city. And there are those who would argue that it is. I know people who have been involved in those projects who would say, yes, it's absolutely escaping. Mm. But so for my generation, or maybe I shouldn't phrase it like that, but very prominent in anarchy for a good part of my time in the anarchist world was the escapism that CrimeSync brought to anarchy. And it was about carving out joy in the world of oppression, stealing moments, and very much left it in an urban setting because most people live in cities and most people can't get out of those cities. Mm-hmm. They have a famous book called Evasion that kind of tells this story. And that became kind of the overarching definition and presence of what escapism looked like in our politics. It never spoke to me. It definitely was about petty crime, which meant that would mostly only work for white people. Mm. And part of it in there was a respite from doing the good work, and the good work being mostly defined, not actually defined, but the good work actually being activist work. And by the time I was an anarchist, I was mostly done being an activist. So, like, the touchstones didn't resonate with me. I understand why it resonated generally. You are actually quite a bit younger than CrimeSync. So this is not the primary lens of your anarchy. You are familiar with it.
Yeah, I'm familiar with CrimeSync. That I did discover them pretty early on, but it was like, I think right before they put out the latest pamphlet that they put out, To Change Everything.
To Change Everything.
Yeah, which is really, I would say, like the decline of that type of crime think.
Yes, modern day crime think has taken a very aggressive turn from the politics that it spent the first 10 to 15 years of its existence spouting.
Yeah. I say there's like a criminality to that crime thing that they kind of like, that's not present anymore.
For sure.
And I think that I don't really see in the escapism of my generation, or, you know, the people that I know that are my age anymore. Like, generally, I don't see people just wanting to really do shit, but even like, they're even more wary of doing illegal shit.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I think that, you know, attests to your presence of state or state surveillance and how we we grew up in basically, you know, surveillance states and not knowing any, you know, a life before it. Right. And probably which is what pushes on the desire to kind of escape through technology and through virtual reality.
Because there's a safety in it.
Yeah, there's a safety in it. And, you know, it's like the internet isn't real. What a lot of people would say. I mean, definitely is real in a sense, but it's not like physical reality. You can't get punched through by internet trolls, unfortunately. Or you can't punch internet trolls, unfortunately.
That's true. That's true. So if we touch on the question to kind of act in good faith here, and the opening line is, what is the goal of an anarchist if not to escape? Would you agree with that?
Generally, I think I would. I mean, why am I an anarchist? Because I want to escape from a world of citizenship, a world of money, a world of commodities even. I want to escape from all of these, but I guess, I mean, maybe I want to escape, but I also want to build and maybe even destroy. So I think that's like a part of it, but not full, like not the full picture.
It's not the crux of it for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
What's the crux of it for you? Just because I'm curious.
The crux?
The, okay. Yeah.
I was just like repeating it for myself. Like,
great.
Probably just a desire for autonomy and want to build my own world. I mean, I don't know if I want to necessarily connect with other people, but
it's all right.
Well, I mean, I definitely do, but I'm not sure if that's what is like the center of my desire for anarchy. It's just, I think it's just generally autonomy, like the desire for autonomy that I don't know if it will ever be satiated, but it's always been present. That's why I initially started calling myself an anarchist, because I wanted that autonomy, and that's why I initially entered radical politics and politics outside the state system. Even, you know, I mean, even then, when I was dissatisfied with the politics, but I didn't question it until I found that, oh, anarchy is a thing.
Anarchy is a thing.
It is a thing.
It's interesting. I would entirely disagree with the statement. Because for me, my anarchy is not about escape. It is, I don't drink and I don't do drugs. And that's one of the reasons why, because I don't want to be numb and indifferent to the world that I live in.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I just don't ever want there to be a moment where I can fool myself. That this isn't what it is. If we're just going to do it based off of desire, I want to destroy.
Mm-hmm.
More than I want to build, I want to destroy.
Yeah, no, yeah. Like, for me, destruction is, like, a major part of me, but a part of my anarchy. But it's just, like, I also do want to build.
But, you know, there is a limit to that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because we are just humans, and the state is the state.
Yeah.
And it was easier to break the law when I was younger. and I have dark skin, so that definitely helped. And as I get older, it gets harder and I'm less willing to pay the price for.
The stakes are higher.
Yeah, the stakes are higher. And now we're terrorists. We weren't terrorists when I was 25.
Really?
Not yet. No, no, this is post 9/11 and the forming of the Department of Homeland Security. I mean, that's actually not true. Technically, by the definition of what it means to be not a traitor. What is the word I want? you know, we are anti-American because we are against what is defined as the American project. Mm-hmm. So there's a technicality in there where we were always terrorists, but the DHS pointed us and named us.
Right.
And that changed it. But the truth is that terrorism laws meant that they could point at anybody and name them and decide that they were terrorists, right? So then it was a different thing. Mm-hmm. So destruction is destruction, but not necessarily the reality. Mm-hmm. So
I always kind of like wonder like the connection between escapism and travel. Cause recently, you know, I went to Cuba and I was thinking like, man, like I did this because I want to escape from the United States, or I want to like escape the reality that is the like American life and go into a new reality. If, you know, like a protected one, because being American in Cuba or being really a tourist in Cuba, you kind of enjoy special privileges that Cubans don't. Which is evident once you go to Cuba. But still, you know, I wanted to just completely be in a different space. I was in a different space, and I did do different things than I would be able to do in the United States. But I still, like, even while I was there, I was like, man, I'm just, like, escape. Like, this is just me escape. You know, it's a vacation. A vacation is specifically to remove yourself.
Absolutely.
It's to escape. But I don't know if I was... I don't know if I would specifically call that like an anarchist escapism, or how to make that escapism anarchistic or.
Well, I guess anarchist. If you took an activist vacation, maybe. No, I'm not sure. but the point being that a vacation is a vacation, and that's different from permanent escape.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I want to go on vacation, and I want to go on vacation from my daily life.
Mm.
I want to be less in demand and have less of every single minute of my day planned and full of something. And
yeah.
And that's okay. Yeah. Anyway, I'm distracted now. So in the question, this person is clearly rural, is clearly urban based. There is something about, living in and being consumed by, the city,
there is.
Especially the big city, so much that I live in the Bay and I never go to San Francisco because I don't really like San Francisco.
Mm. See, I would consider this San Francisco, but that's because in my mind, this is San Francisco.
That's because I don't live here. Because you don't live here.
Yeah.
But for those of us that live here, know that there's a hard, like that Bay is a really hard line. And culturally, there's quite a bit of difference in the fact that Berkeley is actually a really small town. Mm-hmm. The only reason that Berkeley is anything but a small town is because of the university. And I mean, you know, you see where we are and where we sit and how close we are to the university, but there's a way that the University of Culture is actually very separate and very far from us.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, talking about the city, despite all its apparent motion, its glitter-ridden and glowing edifice, Tokyo wears the cloak of smog and stagnant philosophies, of mundanity and broken dreams. And I think that's a really nice way to talk about San Francisco, too. I came out here to go to San Francisco because San Francisco was my escape from the Midwest. And now it's a horrible, terrible, awful place to be because now it's just money and nothing else.
Was it different when you arrived, or...?
It was not. I came in 92, and it really didn't change until about 97, 98, at the height of the first .com. Like, that was when I moved out of San Francisco, because they wanted way too much money all of a sudden. All of a sudden, all the places I could afford to live, I couldn't afford to live anymore. Or if I could, I wouldn't pay it, because it was too much of what I made, or, you know, something like that. So I think there is we have an understanding. What is the desire to escape, if not healthy, hedonistic, honest? There is something healthy about it. There's definitely an honesty to it. Why do seemingly so little of our discussion involve what we as anarchists actually do to escape, or how we actually spend our time?
You know, a lot of anarchists talk about the daily life, but I don't know how much of daily life is escaping.
Maybe
wanting to escape, but not.
There's a pretty strong Christian undercurrent to anarchy, and perhaps maybe anarchists feel bad because escaping is when they're not doing the good work.
Yeah.
For me, the escaping isn't interesting, and the escaping isn't different. Like, my escape isn't different than my mother's escape.
What do you mean by that?
Like, you know, my escape is that I'm actually going to sit down and watch an hour of this television show that I really wanted to see. And that's my mother's.
Okay.
Like, that's not interesting.
Yeah.
So maybe this is why we don't talk about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, for me, I don't know, like my anarchism or my anarchy is escape, like, because it's what I do outside of my obligations or what I have to do to
Got
live.
You.
And it's basically just, I mean, I'm right now, I guess I'm doing anarchy, but that's, I mean, I'm just, this whole project that I'm doing right now, this is just my escape. This is just me trying to live my life in a different way and see what works and see what doesn't.
Right. From what is your actual daily life?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, this is the first summer where I don't have to work. This is the first summer where I fully didn't live like back at home and just the same grind, which, you know, there is, I do miss some of it, but it's not, but is that, that wasn't anarchy. That was just, that was normal.
That was life.
Yeah.
That was just surviving.
That's, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, these are important markers for you. Good. Well, thank you very much for talking to me.
Of course.
You have a good, no you problem. Good night.
This podcast is the effort of many people. This week, the podcast was sound edited by Lino Mabel. The What's New was written by Jackie and narrated by Chisel and a Friend. The editorial was written by Ingrate and narrated by Chisel. We thank Aragorn and a Friend for their help with the topic of the week. Contact us at podcast@anarchistnews.org. To learn more, anarchist and anti-political books, pamphlets, and other material are available at littleblackheart.com. And for news by and or about anarchists and up-to-the-minute commentary, go to anarchistnews.org.